Alex, thank you so much for joining me today. Super excited to chat with you. And Alex, you are the co-founder and CEO of BeatConnect, which is a multiplayer gamified music platform. So of course, we're going to dive very deep into all of that. But before that, could you take me through your background and how you got even involved in, kind of the music space or tech space?
Sure. And thanks for having me today. It's kind of a weird journey that we went through, I got to be honest. If you look at some of the music tech startups out there, it's always, CEO of Ableton and like co-founder of Native Instrument, whatnot. We come from a background that is mostly product and tech. Like in terms of like who are the actual musicians in the gang, it's my partner and co-founder, Nicolas Laroche, who's, the typical musician who would like do these CDs back in the early 2000 and go up the icy stairs in Montreal, knocking door to door to try and sell these things. And obviously it didn't work. No offense to his music, but it's just it's a rough business out there for musicians. So he kind of like went through this whole journey of understanding the professional music versus amateur musician journey and just making music for the fun of it and what were the real hurdle with the technology. And we came to kind of like know each other when we were working at this soul crushing job at Radio-Canada CBC, which is like this Canadian broadcasting network, the equivalent in Canada of whatever it is in the US. And it's not like nothing against CBC Radio-Canada. It's just that we kind of like go on a different speed. And it was a bit too slow for us. So we just bonded over this and we kind of started sharing about ideas, what we could do. And he told me about like the music industry. I come from a more technical background. I'm a mechanical engineer. I did my MBA. I worked for a lot of, big companies and kind of understood the process of building product and data and all of that. So we kind of like had this perfect synergy of he's the technical expert within the music world. I have the technical background to build the business, to run it, the financials, the legal, and all of that. So it was just, match made in heaven. And we dug into this problem. Within the first couple of months, we validated that this was a real, real issue that people had. Music collaboration is to this day not solved. It's not something that people have figured out or cracked. We're really the first company to really address this from the bottom up.
Awesome. Okay. So can you describe to me, like, what is BeatConnect?
Yes. Essentially, as you presented, we are a collaborative platform. So first and foremost, you can picture a Google Doc where you're going to jump into a kind of like a blank page and you're going to see the cursors of people doing stuff. You're going to see what they write. You're going to be able to edit these things. This is the kind of collaboration that we have in mind where it is both synchronous and asynchronous, where you could jump into a session and record stuff. Leave and people can come back and then alter, even if you're not there. But you can also do it synchronously. The thing that we didn't want to do though is mess with latency. A lot of people, they imagine collaboration as doing this remote thing where we're going to synchronize ourselves, 3, 2, 1, and then we start recording. But it's always going to have the issues of depending where you are in the world, there's going to be latency. You're going to miss a point. One of a second, and then the whole thing is scrapped and you need to redo it. So we came in with this novel approach of having this kind of shared DAW that we call the MDAW, which is the foundational piece of any musician that wants to produce music and record music digitally. And then we essentially added a touch to it where we got inspired from the video game industry and kind of like quote unquote gamified the whole process without it again being, bad gamification. We want it to be fun. We want it to be enjoyable. So we kind of like decided even from a technological standpoint that BeatConnect was going to be built using some of the tools from the music, from the video game industry, like the Unity game engine. So in a nutshell, we are a collaborative platform that focuses on the fun of making music. We don't really think about the distribution, the rights management and all that. You come in here just to have fun with people, to collaborate, to create music, and you don't have to think about what it's going to be down the line.
Awesome. Okay, so I wanted to double click on the multiplayer aspect because you said that that was kind of a major pain point that you noticed that you and your co-founder noticed that people were having. Why you said it was a latency issue, but I guess also how does it normally or how did it work before when you want to collaborate with, I was making a beat, you're making a beat, we want to collab. am I like recording my file, sending it to you, and then you're kind of putting over, over your track, and then you're, you know, remixing it and then sending it back to me? Or like how did it work before? Were you guys like, this is terrible, we need to improve, we can improve upon this?
Oh, that's exactly it. And like, depending on what kind of people are making music together, right? If it's two producer versus a producer and a singer songwriter, but let's take the simple case that you just illustrated. The biggest issue right now within the music industry is the different silos that were created around the technology. So if you're using a product like Ableton and I'm using Logic, which is the industry standard for professionals, it's just not going to be compatible. So we have to export all the stems. We have to kind of like just render it into a WAV file that is usable by both platforms. But if you get them from a Dropbox, Google Drive, or like we share them via whatever, and you notice that something is off, you need to get back to me and say, hey, go back into your DAW, tweak this, 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 and this, and then render them again, send them back to me so that I can do the final mixdown. And it's just this, I'm sorry, but like, it's so dumb. It's so backward how long it takes to iterate on something that should be done instantaneously with the technology that we have today. With, again, you look at gaming, how they were able to port, you know, different consoles. You can play from PC to Xbox to PlayStation. It's like they understand that connectivity is a way, it's the clearest path to engagement with your users. If you're able to have people doing things together, they're going to stick around. And this is something that unfortunately the music industry hasn't caught up with. They've created these tribes. You know, if you're using a software, you're almost like, I'm going to ditch you. You know, you're not a friend of mine because we need to stick together, you know, apes together strong or whatever the meme is. But and it goes even like worse than that, because let's say in a best case scenario, we have the same software. To make music today, you use what's called a VST, which is a virtual instrument. You know, very few people are just going to scratch a guitar and record themselves. They're going to click notes within the DAW so that these notes can be passed through the instrument and there's a sound that comes out. If we don't have the very same VSTs with the same version, again, we're stuck in the same issue that I can't share project files with you. I need to render the whole thing and send it your way. So the complexity of this industry is mind-boggling. And like, our sole purpose right now is to remove as much red tape, to make it as simple as possible, to democratize music creation. And you don't do that by complexifying it. You do it by making it accessible, collaborative, engaging. And in our case, we want to use what the gaming industry has done and really kind of ease the path into having fun rather than focusing on just being, you know, producing good music at the end of the day, whatever that means.
So you've probably touched upon this already, but you mentioned like a DAW, DAW.
Yeah.
Can you describe like what is a DAW?
It is essentially, it's the foundational piece of any musical project that is done today. And it's been the case for over 20 years. It's again, you know, a digital audio workstation. So it is your software for creating any music whatsoever. And this goes from pretty much the inception to post-production. Everything happens in there. There's obviously, you know, software that are going to latch on to these DAWs, but they are the heart and soul of the creative process for professional and amateur artists today. Although there are new softwares that are coming out and even apps, you know, on mobile and tablet that are there for more amateur musicians to just create, you know, on the go and make some music on their phone. Ultimately, anything that is being released, I would say like out into the world, for 99% of everything out there is going to be done through a DAW.
And you said that you guys have created an MDAW, like a multiplayer DAW?
Yes. Like, you know, trademark.
Oh, is it trademarked?
No.
Not yet. Just not yet. Soon. I would just imagine that if I downloaded, I don't know about the DAW world or whatnot, but if I downloaded the Logic DAW and you download the Logic DAW, couldn't we collaborate, or it literally does not exist yet?
There are plugins out there that exist that essentially act as a radio, where we would both have that installed on a different software, on a different track, and I could hear what you're doing, you could hear what I'm doing, so we could like just wire back and forth the sound that's being produced from our DAW, but that doesn't give you creative control over what's happening on the other side. So Andrew, if you're you got, you know, half a dozen plugins and you have like all of these tracks layered out, I could get on a Zoom call with you, see what's happening, hear the sound through the plugin, but I'm still unable to do anything other than tell you, hey, maybe this part, you know, needs a bit of work, or you could tweak this, you could tweak that. And it's so backward again, because you have to download all of these third-party systems for something that should be native to the application that you're using. This is one of the analogy that we use, again, from the gaming world. We're gamers, by the way. Like, a lot of us are just, we love everything about this industry. You look at Steam, and the reason why they became, you know, this prominent platform within the gaming industry, and they are essentially, everybody has Steam. Everybody that wants to play online has Steam. It started by just unifying the update flow for one of their earliest game, you know, in the 2000s, because everybody had different launchers. Everybody was kind of like downloaded game left and right. There was the CD copies and whatnot. And what they wanted was a way to patch things easily and to propagate it to their users. This is something that is still not existing today in the music industry. If you're buying a software, if you're maybe even, you know, downloading a third-party software, you need to go to their website. You need to install the loader. You need to install it in your computer. Sometimes you even need a USB dongle in your computer to have access to the software that you paid for. Insane. Insane that this is still happening today in this day and age. So we just want to follow the path of Steam and make it easier to reach out to your friends, to share a project, to collaborate in real time, to update the software that you're using today, so that the $20 that you spent or the $100 that you spent on something can go just a little bit further and not, you know, die after a couple of years because this whole thing is just completely unusable.
Do you have to know, do you have to be a DAW, you know, expert or user in order to effectively make any sort of music? Or like, you know, because you said you can make any sort of sound, you can make a guitar, a piano, whatever. I would just imagine that would require like intense skills in order to create anything.
It highly depends on the DAW that you're using. I will say that generally speaking, the barrier to entry is very high. If you go on YouTube today and you just search for like how to make music using Logic, whatever, you're going to find hundreds, if not thousands of videos, because it is a very lucrative business for content creators to just constantly explain all of the features that are present in the software. They are so complex. Essentially, like the manual for all of the features, 99% of these things are never used by average users. So you get in there, you open the software, and it is overwhelming. However, there are softwares that are easier to understand. Namely, the one from Apple. Essentially, there's Logic, but there's their other one. I'm kind of drawing a blank. But yeah, GarageBand is designed to be more user-friendly, more, you know, I would say early stage adopter of people that are just getting into music. And ultimately, they have their more professional version so that people can graduate from this one and go to the next. But still, there's no hand-holding in these softwares. It's very much you're dumped into it. Some of them have easier ways to start making music, like in Fruity Loop, you have what's called a drum machine, which is essentially just pads that you can hit and you're hearing some sounds already and you feel good about it and you kind of like get into it. But fundamentally, I think it's one of the biggest issue in the industry for democratization of music is that there is no way for people to easily get into it. There are hours and hours until you get to a point where you're even satisfied with what you're creating.
So on a scale of GarageBand to Logic, where would you put BConnect? Is that in the middle, or is that kind of more Logic or more GarageBand?
We're more GarageBand.
Cool.
This is by design. We essentially want to have the creative power of the professional DAWs, which is something that we did, again, from a technological standpoint. We're using Traction Engine, which is one of the most comprehensive software out there for design of DAWs. But we made sure that the environment was going to be segmented in a way where your creative flow reflects the tools that are presented to you. So you're not just presented with an overwhelming interface with, I don't know, you know, 100 different buttons. You're jumping in and whatever you want to do, whether you want to work on drums, whether you want to work on melody, whether you want to work on keys, you select that in the track that you want to work in. And then the tools are going to present to you in a contextual manner. So it's always easier in this sense.
Is there any risk of, you know, like, for example, Logic, you said that expert music producers can use that software. But if you're more in the GarageBand Yeah, GarageBand.
Yeah.
GarageBand style. Does that limit what you're capable of doing or no?
And I would say yes and no, in the sense that like professionals, their market is pretty cornered right now. There's like half a dozen DAWs that are seen as like the standard for professional music. And it's not for a lack of like music being released today. There's 100,000 different songs being released every single day. And I'm sorry, but not all of them are being listened to. So the way that we're approaching this whole thing is that we don't necessarily want to compete with these guys. We don't want to be in the same market as them. And the people that are jumping on B-Connect aren't doing it because they want to release the next, you know, big hit that's going to be running all over the place. They want to do it because they just want to have fun making music. And most of the people that you know, we work with and we talk to, it's always kind of like this thing that they say that sticks with me. It's like, you know, when I don't want to do music, I just want to do music. You know what I mean? And this resonates with me on such a deep level, because a lot of people associate making music today with almost like it's a chore, right? I gotta do it. You know, I gotta release that song. I gotta do that thing. I gotta go through the process. Whereas sometimes you just wanna fuck around for 30 minutes and just maybe create one track and not be done with it, and don't feel that it's again the project that you didn't finish, and you just wanna, you know, push it out there for your friends to add something to it. And feel good that they are working on it, or maybe they're tweaking something and learn in the process. It's again, it's shifting the focus from the area where music is spending most of its time. It's the release of song, the royalties and rights, and just putting it at the beginning, the ideation, the collaboration, and the fun. That is the core of B-Connect. And to do that, we don't need to have all of the functionalities of the big DAWs.
So I love that. I think that, music is such a part of the human experience, and yeah, to make it accessible and approachable and multiplayer, I think that's super cool. I want to double click on that multiplayer aspect. So, what have you found when you're building out this platform with multiplayer? If a creator is collaborating with a friend or two or three or four or whatever, are they, you know, are they just way more engaged, and, you know, is the play time way higher, or, you know, like what kind of user behaviors have you observed from this multiplayer aspect?
All right. So I'll start by taking it from the creator side of things, because I think that's a huge, huge one. Like, we early on in the development of the platform, we kind of like realized that, and obviously we were born through COVID, so this is going to make a whole lot of sense, but we realized that the creator economy was just something that was booming and that was not going to go away after COVID. And to this day, you know, still valid. Creators, we take it, you know, there's the capital C creator, the guy that has 5 million followers and like a big community, whatever. And there's like lowercase creator that essentially maybe has a micro community, or even doesn't have a community, but is someone that is proficient enough with his tool that he's producing stuff that he's pushing online to Discord, to his friend, to like online communities, and they have something to share. And this kind of like ability for the platform to leverage these communities and these experiences, essentially some of the strongest selling point that we had. So like we work with content creators over the last 2 years. We've created events, beat battles. We've created review sessions. We've created all of the possible events that you can imagine. And one of the things that we learned the most is that music creation can be chaos. So this next version that we're releasing in, you know, just a couple of weeks, the thing that we learned the most from the organic growth that we got is that people need to have their own little secret garden, if you will. You know, within the creative space, you need to be able to say, okay, this is my area. I locked it. I can do whatever I want with it. And if I want to open it up to my collaborators, I can, and then they can come in. But segmenting, you know, roles and responsibility. You take care of the keys, I take care of the drum. This is something that is extremely valuable for users. That we didn't do in the first version. It was really free for all. Like, we would do a Twitch stream where we would invite some of the viewers to jump into the session. And man, you wouldn't believe, like, it was fun because it was chaotic as hell, but people were having fun dropping things left and right. And we didn't really get a song at the end of it, but man, we got some good content.
That's so cool. All right. So you mentioned, like, you know, you do the drums, you do the keys. Do you, and this is kind of a more macro question, do users have to generally specialize in terms of one instrument that they're creating within B-Connect? Because it's not they don't have to be a drummer in theory, right? They can just like know how the drums work. And then, but couldn't they also just learn quote unquote, like every instrument on the platform?
It's pretty much agnostic of that, right? You do whatever you want. And the beauty of it is that if you're not proficient with one, you can work with someone who is and learn in the process and then kind of like make it a habit to focus on that part of a project or a song or whatever you want to create.
Speaking of that, like, you know, if I don't have any music friends and I go on BeConnect, is there a way that I can find people that, you know, I'm like, man, you know, I don't know drums. I need someone that knows drums. Like, can I send a friend request or like, you know, how does that work?
We're talking, you know, about the usage of the platform and the virality and all of that. We managed to get almost 75,000 users in the span of like 6 months last year. Very little marketing effort. It was really just, you know, couple of ads here and there. And then we had just one video that went completely viral on TikTok with almost, you know, a million views, wow. Something like 20,000 shares and 2,000 comments. People went apeshit because what they saw was essentially, they called it ranked. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but like in video games, when you're playing, I don't know, a MOBA, whatever, you know, I'm gold tier, I'm platinum or whatever. And they could see this as like the first iteration of what ranked music making could become. Because of the interface. And this perspective on music making doesn't have to be collaborative. You know, you could essentially say that collaboration is not being in the same kind of session at the same time. It could just be that I created something, I made it available to you to do something so that you can take it and add stuff to it. That is quote unquote collaboration, but it's not real time collaboration. It's not even like, I don't even know you, but I jumped on something that you did. So this experience for people that don't have a network is something that we're making available this year. And I can't go into like too much detail, but we are heavily inspired from some of the stuff that TikTok has been doing with kind of like engaging with different creators and building on top of stuff. There is just such a great community out there for remixing and the culture of remixing. So that if you don't have a community that you know, if you don't have people that make music with you, you can always just jump on BeConnect and jump on different projects that people have made open so that you can learn from them. You can see exactly what they did and you can start remixing and sharing after as well.
Okay, so ranked. Are you talking like music battles? I don't know what you can and can't dive into, but is it like, you know, I'm a noob, so I would go on and I'd be in, you know, the novice tier. You're probably way better, so you'd be in like the expert tier. And then in theory, am I like making a song and then people are voting on it? Or, and again, this is going in the weeds, but just kind of like paint me a rough picture of how a ranked like music system or gamified music platform could work.
I'm not going to go into too much detail, but I'll share like I'll paint a picture for you of something that is happening today. And I'll kind of like share how we're making this easier. There's a big trend right now on TikTok where people are just literally filming their screen as their DAW is playing like whatever 30-second clip that they're doing. And because the customization of the experience is so poor when these DAWs, you know, they're not visual medium, they're made to just play the sound good. They're taking their phone and they're kind of like going back and forth with the BPM of the song to kind of like create this vibe. And they're saying in the comments like, hey, if you want this track or if you want the stems and add stuff to it, just DM me. And I'll send it to you so you can create something else from it and put it back. And then there's this chain effect that is being created. So what we're building with this platform is essentially a way for people to bypass this whole kind of like dumb process and just go directly into these projects that are by default unfinished, right? They are just, you know, we call them drops essentially, where if you made a bit of music and you know, you don't want to necessarily finish the whole thing. Maybe you just did a track or whatever, but you know that someone can do something to it and make it even better. I'm just going to drop it for the community to take over. And this thing is very, very organic. It's something that people are already doing in the industry. And for us, it's kind of like a logical continuation to what we've been doing with the product and within the industry. And one of the most beautiful things that we're going to add on top of it is because we are using the Unity game engine, we're able to make this whole experience look and feel as if it was as customizable as any video game you've ever played. So animation, effects, different color, different palette, having, you know, different faceplate for your instruments. So as people are jumping into your project, they can see these things, you can interact with these effects, and it's just so much more vibrant than what we've been seeing so far. You know, the the DAWs, they look like Excel spreadsheet, man, and nobody wants to look at that.
That's so cool. Wow. Okay. All right. So, you know, again, I don't know what you can't say, but these drops, like, what's the issue around rights management? Because are these drops like, hey, anyone can use this, it's royalty free, or like, I get a cut if this is used in some commercial, you know, thing? How does that work?
This one I'll kind of dodge, but I'll talk about one thing is that in general, rights management is only applicable if you're monetizing something. We're not monetizing this. So the same way that, you know, any user could go online and take, I don't know, you know, a song from Dre and just start making music on top of it. You're allowed to do that. You know, it's a free country. You can do whatever you want. But if you drop it on Spotify and on YouTube and you start monetizing it, then, you know, the lawyers are going to come after you. So as for BeConnect, it's always been the case, and it's pretty clear. We follow the common creatives, which is this set of rule, you know, about what you can and cannot do. And users have always had the freedom to decide to what extent their music can be remixed, rebranded, they can be shared, they can be monetized. These rules are also going to be present in this process, but it is going to be the user's responsibility to say, like, look, if I put something online, odds are people are going to use it and do stuff with it. And it's the same on SoundCloud, it's the same on Apple Music. So they just kind of like have to understand that what's being put out there is now on the internet and it's accessible to people. And we're going to help, you know, try to structure this whole thing, but ultimately we're not responsible for suing people that are abusing this system.
Okay, so we're talking about like rights management, and we also briefly talked about like TikTok distribution. So I think that there was a recent case with TikTok where their music provider or someone they were working with basically said, hey, you can't use our music anymore, and a whole bunch of videos were you're unable to listen to the audio anymore. So is this kind of could BeConnect potentially be a solution for, because, you know, you're gonna have all these cool, fun creatives making this music, and, you know, some people maybe would want to monetize, some people just want it for free. But could you, what I'm trying to say is, like, I think the TikTok issue and what you guys are doing goes hand in hand, because you can solve for that. And then on top of that, I think that there is the way that you're designing BeConnect as a gamified platform and multiplayer really lends itself to going viral on TikTok, I feel like. So I don't know. It's kind of a jumble of thoughts, but do you have anything to say around those?
Yes. And what you're referring to, I think, is Universal Music, that they pulled the plug on TikTok. This has been, honestly, for me, like one of the, I'm not going to say like the news of the year, but I will say it's up there in the sense that it is, to me, a clear indication of where the industry is going. Like a couple of years ago, you know, everybody saw Netflix as like this groundbreaking company that was redefining how the industry was going to stream and propagate the media. Today, we're going back to a model where there's like 20 different SaaS subscription that you need to get. So we're kind of back to the old cable days. I think music is going in a similar direction, where with social media, there's been kind of like an era of music just being propagated left and right, and the big distributors had to kind of run after them if there was any litigation for rights management. Today, what they're trying to do by pulling back from TikTok is essentially saying, we need to find a system where the management of the right is done at the source of the content creation and not after the fact, where they need afterwards to kind of like run after it and say, oh, no, you weren't within the box that we set out for you. One of the things that makes it extremely valuable for us for this whole kind of like picture that I'm painting is that, unlike any other software out there that allows for music creation, we are in a position to say exactly who did what, when, and where, and to what extent. We are this platform that is powerful enough to create this quality music. We know which tools you use, to what extent, if something was deleted or added. So we're able to kind of like give the exact breakdown of what was done. Whereas today in the industry, if people, again, are working with different software, different point in time, you don't have that traceability. You shared something with someone, it was shared back, it was scrambled around, and then you lost that visibility. To a point where even the big distributors that we talked with over the last couple of years, they saw that just us being able to provide the traceability of how we named the track and the changes in capitalization and whatnot was valuable for their pipeline. So this is, let's be honest, it's fantastic news, because any company that today focuses on collaboration for the creative process is going to be in a good position to solve that issue about rights management. And the labels and the companies like Sony and Warner and Universal, they're going to come to these companies, whether it's us or another one, and say, look, can we just give you this catalog so that we can work with the creators at the inception of the creative process? You have the rights. They'll just need to maybe pay for, subscription or usage or whatever it is. And then the distribution is done according to that. It is the way that it should be done. And it is the way to kind of like reward the artist properly instead of having like many, many middlemen in the process take a cut. So cut of a cut of a cut. And then the artist is left with basically nothing. But it is very, very hard to do because from a legal standpoint, the way legislation has been built around rights management, it is purposefully made to be complex and purposefully made to make, the most amount of money for the distributors and the labels.
All right. So I have this kind of thesis as to consumer for a UGC where any platform that allows users to create UGC, the content creators, number one, they're driven by their passion of whatever that thing is, whether it be like Roblox or whether it be like, what you guys are building music. But if you enable the users to earn status, through like a following or like, hey, I'm now really well known in the Roblox community or really well known in Beaconnect community. That's really important for those creators. And then also money. So if you give them the ability to build their brand and earn, status points and then earn money, that's like you have a recipe for something really, really impactful there. We kind of spoke about around some pictures of the or pieces of the status area, friends and collaborations and whatnot. Are you adding any other social features on that front that would kind of be a quasi following or something, kind of like a social media? And then in tandem, are you doing anything on the monetization front where a creator could potentially earn money, maybe much down the line or maybe soon?
Yes, to both. We have to be very careful not to fall into the pitfall of trying to be a social media. Like this has been like a recurring discussion internally with the product team, with marketing and whatnot. There needs to be, as you say, credibility that is earned through the platform for someone that is very engaged or that produces a lot of content, that is respected, that has been helping projects, helping people. But we don't want to be a place where people are either going to decide, am I going on TikTok or am I going on Beaconnect? Even as appealing as that thought can be, the path to actually competing with these companies is just insane, right? It's a lot of luck. It's a lot of virality. There's this whole thing. And there's always going to be time to decide if we want to add those functionalities later. Right now, we want to focus on the creative process, but we just want to make sure also that users are feeling valued through this process and that they can see their own progression through their journey. That is part number one. And then for the monetization, like right now, our marketplace is going to be, B2C, where we do sell whatever you need to create as you are creating. So it's, sounds, samples, the instruments. We're going to be selling, obviously, services and something that's a bit novel, but we're going to be selling as well, the skins and the cosmetic for the whole environment, because as a gamer myself, I can help it. This is something that I've spent, hundreds and hundreds of dollars in. And I think it's just really cool to be able to customize the instrument that you've used maybe for years. You just want to have a different flair to it. Maybe you want to buy some kits and presets. So these things that are essentially created in-house by us is very easy to just port over to the community and say, look, you have the skill set to build these things. We just need to provide the tools for you to create them. And that is what, we are essentially building right now and over the course of the year. Our goal is to make it accessible for anyone, not just, the big content creator, but anyone who has a skill set to monetize that skill set on Beaconnect. And I'm not going to lie, like obviously the big content creator is something that's very interesting because they bring their community and they're able to kind of like jump into, a studio that they created within Beaconnect, have thousands and thousands of people in there and create maybe a new sample pack, create a new instrument that is branded to them because we can work with them on that and then just sell it to their community. Andrew Wang, has done that. He's one of the biggest on YouTube and he's done that with, I can't remember exactly, but one of the company he did over the year and like they were selling that plugin for $100. And he obviously he put his brand out there and he worked on this for a while, but it is a very lucrative avenue for these content creators.
That's awesome. Okay. So as a user, Am I able to earn, I mean, you know, eventually earn cool cosmetic items where, I don't know, like a golden dollar or whatever, like a golden interface or something like that?
Yes. We were very careful to essentially not create a pay-to-win environment. Whatever you are doing that is essentially being rewarded within the platform for engagement, you will be able to redeem for assets that are not purchasable with cash. So we made the line there where like these things, these cosmetics, sample pack or whatnot, it was very important because we've played many, many games where we felt that it cheapened the experience. And we just, for us, it's just about rewarding, you know, the users that are actually engaging within the platform and giving them a status that cannot be bought and giving them stuff that cannot be bought. This is, I would say, like a hot topic with, you know, some people that are maybe investors or like whatever, but we believe that for like the health of the platform and the product, there needs to be this clear line that's drawn in the sand.
If there is a interface or asset or, you know, object that I do purchase for my, you know, studio, is there ability for me to sell it in the future and to another user? And so yeah.
NFT, there's, yeah, all of that. It's, I would say it's in the pipeline. Because it's like anyone who doesn't acknowledge the potential of Web3 and these assets that can be created and the tokens and all that, they're just lying to themselves. Like it is obviously something that is going to take over the world in the coming, you know, years or decade, like whatever scale you want it to be. I think one of the issues that we've seen, first and foremost, like we are a startup, so there's only so many things that we can do. So it's not like we can focus on that and just say, this is the value proposition. Our value proposition is the technology, the collaborative platform, and just the whole experience that we created. But once that is essentially settled in, you got millions of users, and you got a community that is vibrant and engaged, I think it makes a ton of sense to allow them to create these assets and protect them and allow them to share them with one another and monetize, whether it's, again, true tokens or NFTs. There is a multitude of ways that we can allow creators and just users to monetize whatever they're doing and protect it and allow it to be shared. To me, it's just a question of timing. I think first and foremost, we need to build a platform engagement within it to a scale where we see this as a viable option.
Makes sense. Okay. All right. I'm spitballing here. This is a brainstorm. Nothing set in stone. But so I kind of view... Within the consumer world, I view crypto tokens, like these, you know, these fungible tokens, not NFTs, as yeah, almost like Chuck E. Cheese tokens, where it's, you know, users can get rewarded or receive these tokens for whatever function. So, for example, with BeConnect, it's like, all right, you've created the best music of the week, you get rewarded 10 tokens. And, you know, those tokens, in theory, have some sort of floating value. And yeah, you've created this kind of mini BeConnect economy, where people are, you know, trying to create better and better content. And, you know, you can kind of set the guidelines of like, hey, you got to, you know, if this piece of music gets so many listens or, so, you know, gets distributed by so much by so many people, you get X amount of tokens. Is that, and, you know, that's a whole economic system and blah, blah, blah. But I just think that these crypto tokens are like the some of the best user acquisition tools of all time. Because you're basically making Chuck E. Cheese tokens digitally and you're creating like a digital playground for that. Is that something that you would ever consider? And again, you know, we're just spitballing as I'm throwing this at you, but just want to ask.
I'll say yes again, but I'll go back to, I think it's a question of timing. And I agree with you on the engagement side of things because the communities that float around essentially tokens and anything Web3 is a very engaged and dedicated one. However, in terms of like absolute addressable market, they're still not to the point where they would compete with like direct engagement with just a content creator that is monetizing the assets that he created and that he branded. So there's a relation of like, for us right now, a relation of effort versus reward, where we can definitely see this as being extremely rewarding and valuable over a long period of time, but in short, medium term, it's not so much the case where we could work with any content creator and offer them to create content on our platform with like actual content, you know, plugins, sound and skins that we have the infrastructure to support. Doesn't need to be tokenized or anything like that. And it's still going to be extremely valuable for them. So for me, it's more about maturity of our company, maturity of our technology, and maturity of the market that is interested in this. There's a bit of a mismatch at the moment, but I definitely see this in the coming years.
I had to ask. I'm obsessed with crypto. I have to, you know, throw that in. All right. So can you talk about the features that you're launching soon, or like this year, we'll call it? And,
yes.
You know, whatever you can't talk about. And then going forward, how would you want BeConnect to look, let's call it like 10 years in the future?
Well, what we're launching this year is essentially a total rework of the user interface. Essentially, as I said, you know, we acquired those 75,000 users last year, and we got 75,000 different feedback from our users. So we kind of like crunched the number, look at everything, the usage rate, you know, what they were doing, who was inviting people to the platform, who was sharing it. So like kind of building this perfect user in our minds. And one of the things that we realized is, first and foremost, the rules of engagement. So having an interface that is clearer on roles and responsibility. So what you're going to be seeing with this next release is what we call the parts. So as I mentioned earlier, keys, drums, and vocals, and essentially any other part that you want to add, so that you can work collaboratively without having to worry about something or somebody coming in and breaking what you've been doing. That is a big, big part. There's going to be, I would say, a bigger emphasis on the Unity platform, where these micro animations that sometimes you don't notice when you're playing a game or using a platform that is very mature, but like, you know, the fades, sometimes the shadows, the clicks, these animations that are added on top of it have essentially added a level of polish to the platform and maturity that wasn't there in the previous version. We're obviously introducing the marketplace, which is a big one. And then over the course of the year, we're going to be rolling out Drops, which is essentially our first layer of engagement and gamification that we add. So like the whole last year was very much about validating, first, that there's an interest for this kind of technology. Second, that the foundational pieces, so the algorithm that we developed, the whole communication system that we have for different users to one another, was scalable and functional. Now that we have this foundation, we can build a house. And on top of it is going to be all about experiences. So we no longer see ourselves as like a tool for collaboration. We see ourselves as a creative experiences. If you come on BeConnect, it's because of the experience, not just because you want to collaborate or whatever. There is something unique to be had here that no other DAO on the market can offer. And this is just the first layer. There's obviously like a world of possibilities that we can build, but we want to be sure that we get, you know, proper user feedback. We're always, always super active in the Discord with emails and whatnot. It's like, I'm going to say this, but like, we are of this community. We're not the big shots from like Ableton and whatnot that have been in this for 20 odd years. We're building this with our ears to the ground, with what the users are looking for and what the new generation is looking for.
All right. So that's kind of, you know, hypothesized dream here. 10 years in the future, what does BeConnect look and feel like?
For me personally, it would very much be what Steam has done. They've made gaming accessible, not only for people, but for developers. Look at how many indie games are being pushed and have seen tremendous success because of Steam. Like PAL World is just the latest example of a long, long series of game. These guys, they're just a small team. They don't have like the big budget of like the EA or the Blizzards, and they're able to break bank because they give access to their game to millions and millions of people. And I think this is the very definition of what the creator economy should be like in the music industry. It's direct to consumer. The platform is very accessible, very user-friendly, even though they could use some updates. You know, they've been there for a while. And they give access also to the analytics for the developers of the games to know exactly where their shortcomings are, where their most engaged users are living and what they're doing, and how they can better improve the next iteration of their softwares. So that is something that is lacking again in music, is they're re-releasing these things, but the data is lacking in some point. It's just, to me, this is just like the embodiment of what we're trying to do.
All right, so I want to touch base on AI and music. I feel like on one hand, AI is going to make just a content, it is currently probably in the process of making a content explosion of just unlimited music. That being said, we already kind of had unlimited music, right? There's only so many, you know, good songs out there, I suppose, or songs that get popular. So how does AI impact the music industry in your opinion, and how does it impact BeConnect?
As far as the broader music industry, I think it's, again, one of those revolutions, right? The same way that any artist today is kind of scared of what's happening with DALL-E and like with ChatGPT releasing Sora. So it's obviously a revolution on all fronts for that. However, the revolution is happening, I would say, if you look at the whole creative process, it's happening at the ideation stage and at the final product stage. So you have people, and I'm talking music here as well, you have people who don't care about the creative process and just want to have the sound or the song fully made. So they're going to go to these AI platforms to generate it, just take it and maybe add it in a video that they're doing. So this is going to impact the music makers for sure. And it's going to impact kind of like the end of the funnel. We live at the beginning of the funnel. We live for people who want to have fun creating. And if you want to have fun creating, there's no fun in just clicking a button and generating something and then saying, I'm done, and then pushing it to the world. Where we see value for us in this whole journey is that you mentioned earlier that maybe you're not good with drums, maybe you're not good with keys. Having AI assistant to kind of like break that wall and saying, I will add an AI assistant specifically for that part of my song, it's still collaboration. You know, you can work with that AI assistant and then maybe you feel more confident in the result. You feel that it's easier to share it to other people. And it just, you broke the wall right then and there. You're ready to start working with people because you don't feel that your shortcomings are this apparent. So that is how I see kind of like AI impacting us. I think it's something anybody out there will say that they need to include it in their technology and what they're doing in their company. But I don't think that it's going to ever kind of dampen the will of the people to really have the fire to create, you know, that this pure instinct of, I just want to have that moment of pure creativity. It's going to support it. It's not going to replace it.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, that makes total sense to me. And music is, you know, maybe this is a bad analogy, but it's like art. It's like, you know, I'm creating a painting or even like I'm playing a video game. You know, it's some activity that's not necessary. And AI is just like, you know, cold, like efficient, hyper efficient kind of machine that can do all these jobs. But when it comes down to people doing what, you know, what we love, create, have fun, you know, engage with our friends, whatever, it's kind of like that will always be, no matter how big and crazy AI gets, like that will always be important, those factors. So I view AI as, you know, this content machine. You can now create content 100 times cheaper, faster, easier. I view Web3 as kind of the monetization layer. So it's a great way to monetize content and engage people and kind of reward for certain behaviors.
Yes.
And AR and VR, I view as kind of this experiencing the content itself. And that to me is kind of the encapsulates the metaverse, you know.
Yeah.
But talk to me about AR and VR. I mean, I don't know if you guys have any plans for that, but you know, how do you think about BeConnect and augmented reality, virtual reality?
I would say that for the longest time, it was essentially in our roadmap because, well, we freaking love it. I think like anybody in the team is going to say that it's something that they want to go to. We just had essentially the creep scope where we couldn't always had to push it back and back and back and back. And like now it's still on the roadmap, but mostly for 2025, 2026. And to kind of like prove that I'm not full of shit saying that, the technology that we used and the way we structured our things is made so that for us, it's basically just flicking a switch. And it would be essentially VR compatible. We've even done tests in the past where we had BeConnect load in with just, you know, a Quest, you know, and it was there and we could play with stuff and it would, but the experience needs to be tailored for VR. Whereas right now it was just kind of a one-to-one of what you would have with the desktop. That being said, what Apple has done with the Vision Pro, I think is honestly a revolution in how people are going to perceive this, well, just the headsets and VR in general, and how they're going to think about their own creative workflow. Because right now, as I stand, you know, before you for this call, I got two screens, I got my keyboard, I got my mouse, and this is kind of like how I create, how I work. If you remove this need for the mouse, for the keyboard, even for the screens, well, you just remove the physical boundary to what I'm bound to create music. You could have this world of instruments. You could have everything around you and you could essentially unleash something that's not been done before. So for us, it is for sure like the direction where the industry is going. But there's one thing that I've learned with BeConnect is that because the music industry is so far behind sometimes technologically, and because this is so far ahead, even of just any industry in terms of technology, I think the gap is too wide at the moment for the average users. You need to take smaller step into bringing them into what is essentially kind of like the standard today. And then you can kind of like go wild and dream with what can be done with this technology.
That makes sense. Well, let me know when that update happens, because I want to be a world famous DJ playing to my million AI fans. So ping me. Awesome. All right. Well, Alex, this has been absolutely amazing, but it's time for the closing questions. All right. What are you bearish on?
Oh my God. In general or in
or about the business? It could be anything pertaining to your work, your business, or it could be something macro. We've had all sorts of answers.
Well, look, in general, I will say I'm from Quebec. So winter, I'm sorry, but like I can't wait to for it to be summer already. I'm kind of tired of the cold. So that's one. But no, more seriously, I will say that I think one of the things that that's kind of like been a cycle with us, specifically for the business, and my role has always been kind of like these ebb and tides of the startup world, where you're in a mindset of creating, and then business goes well, the numbers go up. Oh, you got to go for another round of financing. I don't know any founder that really loves this this part of the journey. Doesn't mean, you know, that we don't do it well or that we're not successful, but I think it's just like, it's so stressful. You know, it's these period of times where you don't sleep so much, you're always kind of like this stress level, and you don't think so much about, you know, your family, your just leisure and whatever. So if there's one thing that I'm never really looking forward, it's that kind of like, it's always a rough period.
It's funny you say that, because, you know, I am technically a VC, and I want our founders to get off the hamster wheel that is venture capital, right? Because it's kind of and you know, we understand, obviously, it's part of the business. Like, there's certain startups that you need to have constant flow of capital. You need to have that growth. But it is exceptionally stressful for everyone involved. And you know, I'm saying this as someone who's kind of against my interest, because, you know, in theory, we can invest more the more you raise. But I think that we're in a period now after the 2021 kind of COVID bubble. I think a lot of people are now thinking about monetizing earlier and growing in a more sustainable fashion versus kind of being on that VC hamster wheel. But not that the VC hamster wheel is bad. It's just that, as you mentioned, it's very stressful and it can kind of distract you from the ultimate objective, which is building like the best thing possible. So
yep,
I agree.
But there's a need for it as well. It's sad to say, but it weeds out sometimes some of the companies that, you know, if you can't kind of go through that flow, any other event could be kind of like, I would say, like a deal breaker for the business as well.
Totally agree. All right. Other end of the spectrum, what are you bullish on? Meaning, like, what are you excited about?
I will say what we're doing right now, like, I'm a product guy. So anytime we're building and we're talking with users and we're iterating, this is like the best time of my week. And like, just looking at the data and engaging with users, it's why we do it. Like, if we were all about, you know, typical, I would say, like Fortune 500 companies about, you know, making money and monetization, and we would have taken a very, very different approach to building this business. And that's one of the reasons why we're the only one who are doing this the way we are today, is because the big companies out there that could do it, it's essentially a lot of, it's capital heavy to build this technology. The validation of the market has not been clearly defined yet, so it's too risky for them. And any other startup that could go there, it's, again, capital heavy, so they're going to compromise their vision to make money earlier on in different models, which essentially is going to turn off the users. So we are really doing this because we want to see this change in the industry. We want to get the feedback from the users. So this period of time right now, where we're just like weeks away from a release, and the following 6 months of just seeing the growth, you know, the virality, the engagement, the videos, people having, man, that is, I couldn't sleep better at night. It's just so, so much fun. And then on the personal side, I love rock climbing, man. It's every year since COVID, like before COVID, 6 years straight, we were going to Yosemite, me and my buddy, to just, you know, climb big walls. And it is something that I miss dearly now that, you know, I'm now a father. I've started a business. It's getting harder and harder to actually keep in good a shape and in as good a shape as I want it to be so that I could go out there and really kind of like just grind. But yeah, I think summer in Yosemite is kind of like my happy place.
That's awesome. Are you going to, you're not, what is it called? Oh my God, I'm blanking. The free climbing? You're not free.
Oh my God, no.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
No. Don't worry about it. I'm as safe as can be. We do trad climbing, which essentially, you know, there's no fixed protections on the wall. You need to place it as you go. But it is, historically speaking, you know, pretty safe if you do it right. It's people that do this, I don't understand. Like just seeing that and talking about it, my palms are getting sweaty.
Oh my gosh, so. Me too. Yeah, that's all right. What is the best piece of advice you've ever received?
I know it sounds kind of like oversaid, but validate before you build. I did my MBA. I have like all of these books behind that I've read that always say the same thing. You know, it's like, just create a website with this subscription list to see how many people are going to click on it and do it. And even though I've had all of these freaking warnings, we still fell into that pitfall of building something before validating it. And that is like part of the journey that we had last year where, when I said earlier, like we tried to go too far in the gaming world and people weren't ready for it. That was part of one of the assets that we created within the platform. And man, I just wish that we had taken the time to do surveys, to do group focus, to get, you know, we had a network in place, but we were just so excited about what we were building that we didn't do that level of validation. And now I will say it again, and I'll say it to any other entrepreneurs that, you know, I work with, whether in incubators, accelerators, it's not the end of the world if, let's say, you engage 1,000 people with an idea and you lose them in the process because you're not delivering on it. You have to keep in mind that the market that you're targeting is not the early adopters. It is the 99% of the world that you're targeting. So that 1% is your stepping stone to actually validating that what you're doing with your money, what you're doing with your resources is time well spent. And it's money well spent. And again, it's so obvious when we say it, but we still don't do it enough.
That's awesome. All right, last question. What motivates you?
I would say it's kind of a trick question. First of all, you know, I did work in like big businesses and I was happy. So why am I doing a startup right now? I would say that fundamentally I have kind of an issue with authority within the business where I just want to create. I just want to be able to kind of like be in a position where there's a good idea. There's something that fits. We shouldn't be bound by like the typical structure of the big business to build it and see it to fruition. So that was always kind of like my number one reason. I just love the startup environment and the freedom that it brings. So like freedom is a big part of it. Obviously, I would say that it boils down to like personality, right? Some people, they deal better with stress. Some people, they can't really handle it. So for me, it was always a mix of like my personality type, my ambition to build a company, and kind of like this middle ground that it brings to kind of be in the position that I'm in. So motivation, I was like, I'm not going to get too deep into psychoanalysis, but just freedom. I love to be able to do what I do and kind of like do it whenever we want.
I love it. Love it. Alex, thank you so much. This was absolutely stellar. I learned so much. If people want to find out more about yourself or BeatConnect, where should they go?
Well, beatconnect.com is our website. If they want to look at the product, download it, try it out. There's a new version coming out in just over a month. So be on the lookout for that. This is going to be an early access version for us to kind of like iron out the kinks. But in the coming months, you're going to be amazed by what you see. And if you want to follow us on social media, we have a TikTok account that we're very active on, Instagram, pretty much, you know, all the different ones. And if you just want to chat, you can come join us in our Discord. All of these links are at the bottom of our page, so it's pretty easy to go.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Alex. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me today. It was really nice.